Hey y'all, are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's killing you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created Webseed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars dirty hands. Demand the truth. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts, Dr. Attorney and author Mayor Eisenstein and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific Times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific Times. But you can listen to the archives at blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour or naturalnewsradio.com at any time that's convenient to you. And welcome this evening. This is August 18th. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. And with me now, my wonderful co-host, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Mayor, pleasure to be with you again, as always.
Alan, it's always a pleasure to be with you, always. I the last couple of weeks, I've been looking at some of the older articles about some of the organizations that were looking at questioning vaccines. And I found one from 1881, like I talked about last week, was a member of the British Parliament who introduced a bill to eliminate compulsory vaccination, forced vaccination. Sounds like almost nothing's changed, you know. And then I got a wonderful email from Jim Moody. And Jim Moody, do you know Jim Allen?
I recognize the name, but you're going to have to...
Yeah, he's an attorney. He's done a lot of work also with vaccine rights. I think he's out of Washington, D.C. I met him about 6-7 years ago. Wonderful, wonderful gentleman. And he writes to me, Dr. Eisenstein, questioning vaccines goes much further back than 1881. Indeed, to the very earliest days, a good example is the painting Cowpock by British satirist James Gillray in 1802, distributed by the Anti-Vaccination Society. And so I looked up the cowpock. It's a great, great painting. But I tell you what interests me, and he shows all these pictures of horrific side effects of the people who were getting the vaccines. But I tell you what interests me the most about the painting, and that if you take a look at the upper hand of the painting, there's a picture of the golden calf and everyone worshiping it. And for those who don't remember the Old Testament, that's when the Jews left Egypt, you know, and they kind of questioned maybe it was a mistake to leave, and they gathered all their gold, and a group of the Hebrews built a golden calf, and they started worshiping the golden calf. And, I think this couldn't be more perfectly depicted, that I think worshiping vaccines is literally like worshiping the golden calf. You know, and I thought it was just, here we are, over 200 years ago, the vaccines were questioned. The only thing that's different is the amount of money that the pharmaceutical companies have gathered and found that this is the most profitable avenues. It's grown out of control in a sense, and it's Hollywood has picked it up. I've been watching a series called The Last Ship, which is good except for one premise. It's a story about a virus that's killing most of the population of the world. On this ship, they're developing a vaccine. And, of course, they developed the vaccine, and they're going to save whoever's left. I mean, Hollywood has picked up because it's such a nice thing to think that we can get rid of illnesses with vaccines, as opposed to the way that all plagues have ended. Sanitation, sanitation, and more sanitation.
It's just fascinating, you know, because of the ease with which we now, in our current society, I hesitate to call it modern, but the current one, with which we communicate with one another and share ideas, and just in the last 20 years, and the better part of that last 20 years, you know, most of us coming on with any sort of regularity in the with the internet, not as long as 20 years ago. Mayor, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I had internet access for a period of a few years before I finally got it through my thick skull in such a way that it was a reflex, that any time I had a question, I could just go over to the computer and send it out there and find some sort of an answer on the internet. And so it's really been the last, maybe 10 or 15 years for most of us that we have been availing ourselves of the convenience of sharing information the way we have. And I think that, of course, gives us the most possibility and potential for not only sharing the information, but organizing in some way with and around that information to make a difference. Because there's still, and I'm adamant about this, I have been for some time and remain so, that as critical as it is to have an awareness, that's the first step. And as I have said in the past and clarified with Dr. Tenpenny, that this issue is first and foremost, and at the end of the day, it's a scientific issue with science questions. Are vaccines safe? Are they effective? Is the theory sound or flawed? And so forth. But just having the information probably is not going to do anything in and of itself. We have to put that information in action in some way. Now, I say probably because I think if there's broad enough awareness about a serious issue, almost that in and of itself can sometimes inspire officials to take action. But not wanting to rely on that or wait to see if that happens. I think it's much more important that we be proactive. And I think a lot of this, in addition to, of course, educating ourselves and when and where it's appropriate, helping to share information and educate others. But ultimately, I think a big piece of where the rubber meets the road, as I've said before and sure will say again, is in the state legislators in particular, federal legislature as well. But I think primarily in the state legislatures, because a lot of this arena falls within states' rights area, and as evidenced by the fact that we see, while vaccines are mandated in every state for school and daycare enrollment, for example, every state has its own particular laws and its own particular procedure for exemptions and its own particular exemptions and so forth. So there's just a lot of this that is individual to each state. So let me just finish that little rant there, if that's what it is, with a reference again to the National Vaccine Information Center's advocacy portal at nvicadvocacy.org, where anybody can go and monitor what's going on around the country in terms of bills either seeking to expand our right to make informed choices or bills seeking to further the pharmaceutical agenda, which tend to outweigh the former of those two considerably at this point, unfortunately. And you can see, of course, what's going on in your state in particular. And if you choose to sign up, which and they, of course, will keep all your information confidential, which means only the NSA has access to it, they will take your address information and plug it in, and they can then tell you who your state representatives are, what the contact information is, and so forth. I mean, it couldn't be easier, any easier at any other point in time than it is right now to be legislatively active in the NVIC advocacy portal. Specifically focuses on and limits itself to vaccine bills and vaccine legislation. So it's a great way for people to be active and be involved in that arena with a minimum amount of time and effort.
And they have done such great work, and there's so much information on their website. There's so much information. You know what's kind of interesting, Alan? I've been following the NVIC for quite a few years, kind of as a bystander. And at first, I think they were trying to have an even-handed discussion on vaccines. There's dangers. The legislators will hopefully fix that up, or the doctors will fix up. I don't see that anymore. It's like, you know, they've become more militant in a sense. They realize that it's a losing battle to try to give equal credence to the other side. You know, equal credence in a sense of not bypassing scientific evidence, but not give any credence to the concept of a hepatitis B vaccine on the first day of life, trying to make Gardasil vaccine for all children, and kind of pretending to the public that this is a public health concern. I think it's very exciting, because I think they've drawn a great following, and very, very, very exciting. But I just want to make one more shout out, and that's to our dear, dear friend, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, because Sherry was the first one to say that vaccines is a failed 200-year experiment. And now, finding the Anti-Vaccination League of 1804, she's right. It's not just kind of a myth. Here we have evidence that, you know, that this has not been something for 100 years, 150 years, but over 200 years. I mean, and I think it's going to crack, Ellen. I think that the public is, you know, there was a doctor, an Orthodox Jewish doctor in New York, who wrote a scathing review of the wonderful publication Peach, which was put together by a group of Orthodox Jewish people in New York, made hundreds of copies and passed it out to everyone in the neighborhood. They extensively researched all the problems with vaccines. They have like 100 references. I'm making up the number, I'm not sure. And he goes and he writes, everyone is fraudulent and everyone is not true. I mean, and I don't even think he even read any of the review or any of the articles. You know, it's kind of unbelievable. You know that when someone has to make such a ridiculous statement, and shame on this doctor, you know, for, you know, just make such a ridiculous statement, you know. But that's how desperate they are, because they see every day in their office now parents coming in and questioning their authority. The one thing that doctors can't handle is their authority is being questioned. But what I'm ashamed of doctors, why do you take this as gospel? I mean, why do you take this whole vaccine program as gospel? It doesn't make sense. Question it. I'm not saying you should change what you're doing, but don't take it as gospel. When a patient walks into your office and is about to be vaccinated, you do have an obligation to explain to them the risks and the benefits. I don't know any doctors who ever tell them there's any risk to the vaccine programs.
Yeah, and it seems, Mayor, that there's obviously more to this for the doctors than simply just on a more superficial analytical or intellectual, maybe it's the word, intellectual level, that this is what they're told and this is what they believe. It's like they're defending themselves on a deep personal level. There's some kind of investment in this that they couldn't be wrong, because somehow if they are wrong, whatever the doctor's sources is, you know, the CDC or whoever they align with, accept, and so forth, that if anyone else is wrong, that somehow they're so closely tied to that in such a deep way that it fundamentally invalidates them personally. It's as though the doctors take the questions as a personal, deep personal insult or a deep personal offense, when that's not really what's going on at all. I think most parents just want to have a fair, calm, intelligent discussion. Hey, what about this? What about that? And it's interesting, even a little disturbing, but maybe telling, when those doctors who do respond emotionally, when they respond emotionally, because that suggests an emotional, maybe subconscious commitment on their part to something that, boy, it sure would be nice if they could just have be detached from it on that emotional or even subconscious emotional level, and let's just have a conversation about what the information says and what information from where and so forth. But, Mayor, it's starting to unravel. I just saw, I've seen a flurry of a few different articles pointing to some CDC whistleblower things going on here. And I just want to mention real quick, we had, I just checked the screen a couple of minutes ago. We had a couple of callers. Looks like we have just one holding right now, and we see you. We'll get to you shortly. So please hang on if you call in and have hit one to get on the air with us. We see you and we will get to you. But I wanted to mention first, this is an article here that was at a website called marketwired.com, and they cite as their source the Focus Autism Foundation. And I just want to read, in fact, this was just out earlier today, a study by Focus Autism Foundation finds CDC whistleblower reveals widespread manipulation of scientific data and top-down pressure on CDC scientists to support the fraudulent application of government policies on vaccine safety. Now, we saw a version of this in a peer-reviewed study published in June from a group of researchers led by Dr. Hooker. And his name comes up again in this article. Apparently he's published something just earlier this month, Mayor, that showed that African-American boys receiving their first MMR vaccine before 36 months of age are nearly 3.5 times more likely to develop autism than those that started after 3 years or 36 months. Now, the article here focuses on African-American males, and for some reason it affected them much more severely, at least in the study group here, than white males. But white males had and I don't know, remember the exact figure now, but it was maybe roughly half the same increase, but still a statistically significant increase, almost twice the rate as opposed to 3.5 times with African Americans. And of course, the obvious next question is, well, why is it that this particular population has been affected so severely in this way? And there's room there, of course, for follow-up studies to see if we can figure out what's really going on here. But Hooker says that the CDC knew about the relationship between the age and first MMR vaccine in autism incidence in African-American boys as early as 2003, but chose to cover it up. There is powerful information coming out now, and someone sent me a link to a video where Dr. Wakefield is talking about this and pointing fingers and showing pictures of people from the CDC who knew information. And the people that are starting to speak out about this, Mayor, are saying this is one of the clearest cases of not an accident, you know, but deliberate, in terms of the evidence, deliberate fraud. Now, you know, the obvious next question in my mind is anyone prosecuting or going to be prosecuting this? So we'll have to see how it plays out. But I've got links to several articles on this topic at the Pandemic Response Project website. It's those three words all spelled out, pandemicresponseproject.com. And there's a news link at the upper right, take you to the news page. And I encourage folks to go look at these in more detail because we're seeing some of this get documented and come out there. And if it doesn't get snuffed and disappear right away, which looks like a difficult thing to do at this point, maybe we'll see this finally blow open a little bit.
Well, I think it is blowing open. You know, just by the mere fact we've reported now for months and months that all the efforts by the Center for Disease Control, the American Academy of Pediatrics, to increase the vaccination rate, and every campaign they put out, they find that more and more people are questioning vaccines. It's like we're almost better off to just let them hang themselves, because it's the theory is flawed. I mean, that's really the bottom line, you know. And it's nice for Hollywood movies, but it doesn't fit the pattern of what we're looking at. What we want is lifelong immunity from something. We don't want this temporary immunity. And what we talked about weeks ago also was the good chance that vaccines may be the cause, and I quote now Dr. Paul King, of chronic illness in not only children but adults. Well, what we mean by chronic illness, cancer, heart disease, autoimmune disease, you know, these have skyrocketed, and it could be that we're trading one for another, but the overall effect still has to be, are we healthier because of this? And there seems to be lots and lots of evidence that we're not healthier.
Well, let's hope that this keeps coming out. Let's keep putting the pressure on. Let's keep talking about it here, of course, and so we can inform people and keep the conversation alive, and just really encourage our listeners to look into it further and share the information as well. The more people that become aware, because I don't think we're going to see this on the 6 o'clock news just yet. And and sometimes, Mayor, I feel like, you know, I almost don't care if some of this reaches the mainstream media or not, because people are moving more and more to alternative media for their information anyway. It's almost like, why don't we just let the mainstream media die of attrition and let people come to us? But one indicator of a genuine breakthrough to me would be if something like the CDC criminal cover-up were prosecuted and that were brought to the mainstream news. That would be a huge signal that we are having, you know, major, major breakthrough. But we don't have to wait for that to happen to have the breakthrough. You know, we can create the breakthrough by helping to continuing to educate ourselves and helping to educate others. And I say that not meaning just you and me, Mayor, but of course all of our listeners as well. It's going to take all of us working together to shift the paradigm. And I think we can do it. It's an enormous task, but I think it's already happening, and I think we can facilitate that shift so that we see a change in our own lifetime to something more sane. At least that's my goal. I'm not dying until I see this stuff change. So that's my commitment, and I'm sticking to it.
Let me tell you, Alan, things are changing. You know, I go back to I've been practicing now for 41 years, and if you would have asked me 41 years ago, and I knew about this not because of my brilliance, because I've been blessed to have been a student of the late Dr. Robert Mendelsohn, who made the statement in the early 70s that every vaccine causes brain damage, and no vaccine has ever been shown to eliminate any infectious disease. So I knew this before my children were born and my grandchildren were born. But I never would have guessed that this would become one of the seminal issues in medicine where millions of families would stand up and say, we're not going to vaccinate. I'm absolutely astonished by this. You know, it just goes to show you the power of the people, in a sense. But then again, when you cause brain damage to children, like it's happened with vaccines, you're going to have a lot of angry, angry parents, and they're going to speak up, and their voices count a real lot.
Mayor, I saw a, I want to say wonderful, but I'm not sure if that's really the right word, but you will certainly appreciate it. A little graphic image that somebody had sent me, and I wish I could give due credit to the source, but I just don't recall or know what that was. But anyway, it's a reference to vaccine injury or death caused to children. And just to give a real quick framework of that, the federal government, I did a little math with the statistics on the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program website. For the past 25 years, the federal government has paid out, on average, more than $110 million a year for vaccine injury and death. And when you add to that the fact that even people from the FDA and CDC and the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, among others, have estimated that only 1 to 10% of the serious adverse events ever even get reported. So we really have no clue what the real or true scope of accident injury and death is. We just know it's enormous and much bigger than anything we have data for. But this little graphic image said, just so simply but profoundly, no parent has ever said, gosh, I hope I'm quoting this right too, no parent has ever said, yeah, I was glad to take one for the team. You know, no parent whose child is injured or killed says, yeah, but, you know, that was a necessary cost for protecting the rest of society. You know, is what the message by implication was.
That's the myth. You know,
myth. My point is, I know
you meant that, but, you know, but that's what's so... So absolutely interesting. You know, we're living in exciting times, Alan, because I think this whole thing is going to just blow up. You know, Stalin said it the best: the death of one person is a tragedy; the death of a million is a statistic. You know, not that the death of that young teenager in St. Louis, the one that was shot by the policeman. But boy, let me tell you, the media jumps on this, the government jumps on this, and someone says something very good. In Chicago, where our president is from, there were 25 deaths over the weekend, teenage deaths over the weekend, and that's anonymous. And I'm not saying one's better than the other, but you know the way to get a population worried about vaccines is to keep perpetuating myths. And the exciting thing is that these myths have side effects to them. That's the vaccination programs. And all of a sudden, it becomes obvious to many people that it's not clear cut. I ask all the families I see in the office, and you know, this is the season where I'm blessed to see hundreds and hundreds of families who have opted not to vaccinate. And I ask them, how did you come to this conclusion? And you know what, Alan, most of them tell me, it just doesn't feel right. Isn't that exciting?
I think that's wonderful, because I think that all of us, Mayor, have an innate ability to put things together, not necessarily based solely on rational input, although certainly there's information there to come to the rational conclusion. But I think intuition is a very real faculty, if a little bit ephemeral or hard to nail down in an objective sense. But I think it's inherently subjective, perhaps. But people got to learn to trust their gut more or their heart more, or you know, that feeling when you just know it's not right. Maybe the feeling is totally separate unto itself in terms of, as a faculty of human functioning, or maybe it's just the way part of our mind fills in the gaps when we have some information. Or maybe our subconscious can make connections sometimes better than and quicker and more effectively than our conscious mind. Whatever it is or whatever combination of things, it is something that is a real skill that we have and I think is important for us to learn to trust and to include along with our conscious, rational faculties. Because a lot of times that'll take you to the right answer. I don't think I would be confident enough to rely on it solely in myself, but there are times when you have whatever information you have, but at the end of the day, it just doesn't feel right. And I've heard over and over again where parents will say something in retrospect. Well, it didn't feel right, but the doctor said to do it, and it was okay, and we did it. You know, and then something tragic happens. So I do think it's a at the risk of being criticized for being perhaps non-scientific about it, I do think it's a valid thing there. Let's go ahead and go to break, Mayor. We're at the middle here.
Sounds good.
We've talked our way to the break again, but we do have a caller on the line. We'll get to you right after the break, so stay with us. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips, and we will be right back with you just a couple of minutes.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
Hey y'all, are you looking for Cloella? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips, and you can call in during the live show on Monday evenings either just to listen or if you have a question or comment, you can call in to participate. The number is area code 646-478-0772. That's area code 646-478-0772, and you can also email us during the week, mayor, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com. Mayor at homefirst.com and attorney at vaccinerights.com. Attorney at vaccinerights.com. Mayor, let's go to the phones. We have someone who's been patiently waiting through a good part of the show, somebody whose phone number ends in the numbers 35. Thank you for your patience. Tell us your first name and welcome to the show.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Brad from Los Angeles. How are you?
Brad, how are you?
Great to hear
good.
From you.
I just wanted to make two quick points, and then I'll leave you guys to your business. I was listening to the March 31st episode of your show, and, Mayor, you were talking about the C. diff invasion in hospitals and how the FDA was going to possibly green light antibiotics in order to fight this outbreak of this deadly infection in the hospitals. And I found out recently that the Mayo Clinic did something that none of the other hospitals are doing. They're having their staff go around with those disposable bleach wipes, and they're wiping all the surfaces that aren't being readily cleaned in all the rooms. And they reduced the C. diff infection by 90% in like a month or less. And like you were saying in that show, you said sanitation. And so there's your perfect example. These hospitals are cutting back on wiping down the surfaces that everyone touches. And the C. diff was spreading throughout hospitals throughout the country.
Oh, Brad, so that's a fabulous point, because, you know, it's, we get the illusion that if you're wearing gloves, if you put on a mask, you know, that that you've protected yourself. And oh, my God, that's such an on-point point. I love it.
Good. And the other thing, one other point, and I'll leave you guys. We're up to now, you have a 130 podcasts on your SoundCloud channel, Mayor, and we've both of you, it's really getting a lot of action. And recently I put up the Tetiana Obukanich and the Sandy Luno podcast, and they're getting a ton of response from all the vaccine networks on Facebook. They've been getting reposted everywhere, and so we're over 9,000 plays on the channel and 400 downloads. So we're picking up a lot of momentum, and some of those people are great. So we're going to keep putting more stuff up there. If anyone wants to check it out, just go to SoundCloud and put in a search, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, and you'll find the SoundCloud channel with 130 subject-based podcasts that are full of great information.
Alan, so, I'm not sure you know exactly what Brad's exquisite editor is among all the things, you know, and he's taken the shows and he's put 5-minute segments, 8-minute segments, so that people can, and he's put a lot of commentary on it. You know, it's been just absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, tremendous amount of work that you've been doing, Brad, and just we really, really appreciate what you're doing, not just because it's, you know, maybe a little flattering to us that you're, you know, spending the time doing it, but you're getting the information out there, and I love what you're doing and what SoundCloud enables you to do, where you can break down an hour-long show that a lot of people don't have time or won't take time. You know, I can't tell you how many videos I get links to that are 2 or 3 hours that I'd love to watch that it's just not going to happen just for lack of time in my life to do it. But when you can search through something and find, you know, a 5 or 10 or 15 minute segment on something that is a particular point you're interested in or dealing with in your life, it's just a fabulous service that you're doing, Brad, and we really, really appreciate
it. Well, and the other part of it is that the SoundCloud has a terrific mobile application that allows you to download the mobile app and then listen to them when you're walking your dog, or whether you're about to go to sleep, or whether you're in your car. You can hook in your device, your tablet, or your smartphone, and listen to the podcast wherever you might be. And you can also follow a particular person, and then you'll get a notification, hey, new podcast up, you know, go here and listen to it. So SoundCloud is a terrific company. So gentlemen, thanks for all your hard work, and take care and have a nice evening.
Oh, thank you, Brad. Thank you.
Great hearing from you.
Yeah. You know, Alan, it is really exciting. And, you know, Dr. Obukanich, the work she's done is way beyond my understanding. I'm a relatively simple guy when it comes to this. This is I'm black and white. My wife said I've always been black and white, you know. Her work on the whole concept
do vaccines bring about immunity? You know, they bring antibody titers, but that doesn't translate necessarily into immunity. And very exciting, very, very exciting stuff.
Well, and she's got a new project she's working on now. Let me see if I can. I'm trying to pull up information here so I can be accurate about this. She's got a new website and a new project she's working on in offering natural immunity web shops and do this, I think, offering it over Skype, ways that people can avail themselves of her information and benefits of her research. And one of the things that's just wonderful about what she does and the way she does it, Mayor, and I'm not the only one who has been impressed in this way by her, is that she has clearly a brilliant mind, has you know, gotten a PhD, knows the subject inside and out, but she has a way of taking that and turning it into language that even we lay people who don't have the scientific background can easily hear and understand. She communicates just in a very effective way, is what I'm trying to say, which is all the more amazing given that English is her second language. And I believe she's from Eastern Europe originally, so she just impresses me on so many different levels. Her initiative for putting things together, her creativity, her expertise, of course, her perseverance in the face of difficult arena in terms of what she's doing by having had to necessarily unplug from the mainstream world, which is bad as it is for many people, is a guaranteed or much better prospect anyway for regular income and so forth. So she is just really amazing on so many levels. I'll see if I can find that, and for some reason I can't find it during the show here. I will certainly bring it up next week and give people the specific information. But Tetiana Obukanich, immunologist, natural immunity workshops, where she will not only talk about what the inherent problems are with vaccines and the vaccine policy and so forth, but what is it that you can do then to bolster your immunity or the immunity of your children? I think right now she's focusing on families and children, which I'm sure that will expand in the future to incorporate, you know, focus on adults as well. So she is definitely someone to watch. She's on the move and moving in a great direction.
Very, very exciting stuff, you know. It's kind of like what's happening is the science is catching up with the observations of doctors and parents that there's something wrong. Parents have been very aware that their vaccinated children. I have now hundreds and hundreds of families that their older children are vaccinated, the younger ones are not. And unsolicited, I've said this now for 3 years, unsolicited, these parents tell me the younger children are not vaccinated, are never sick, and the older ones are the ones who get sick. And this is a straight parental observation, and they didn't think, I never asked them this question. This is very, very exciting. And, you know, it goes back to that one study that I finally tracked down again that Dr. King sent me, where they had the teenagers, and they gave approximately 100 of them the flu vaccine. The other 100, they just injected them with a saline solution, just a water solution. No one knew what they got. At the end of the year, they found there was almost no difference in the incidence of flu, but the incidence of other respiratory illnesses, as serious if not more serious than the flu, was 4 to 5-fold in the vaccinated population. And that goes along, which I think is the ultimate theory that we're going to find, that the vaccines, even if effective, are causing such problems in our immune system that the overall effect is going to be detrimental.
It's fascinating again, though, that we have people who are pointing this out and citing the studies. Mayor, let me go back for just a moment here, because I did find this while you were talking. Tatiana's she still has, I'm sure, the whatever previous website she had, but a new one called naturalimmunityfundamentals.com. All those words spelled out, naturalimmunityfundamentals.com. And the Natural Immunity Fundamentals is a series of Skype-based lectures from Dr. Tatiana Obukhanich, immunologist. So encourage folks to go to the site and look that up and participate in that. Educate yourself, support her in the work that she's doing at the same time, because it's really important work. So glad to be able to put that out there. I got a couple of short new things I want to just run past you. Sometimes just the article title is enough to give you the gist of what's going on. And here's one. Let me see if I can. It's from the New York Post. And it says, New York hospitals don't make healthcare workers get vaccinated. And I just have to sort of, I don't know, maybe chuckle because Mayor, you know, as we've talked about in recent shows, New York City now requires 6-month through 59-month olds, children in daycare, preschool age range. They're now required by the city. Only time I recall a city mandating vaccines for children to get flu shots if they're going to be in any New York City regulated childcare, daycare, preschool. And yet they're not mandating, apparently, according to this article, flu shots for the hospital workers in the city. So that's sort of interesting.
It's very interesting. You wonder if it's because there were hospital workers who were rebelling. I'm just wondering. I mean, why else would that be?
Well, I heard from a reliable source, and she was not at liberty to or didn't feel comfortable naming the hospitals. But she said there's three hospitals in the New England part of the country where the healthcare workers made a big enough fuss about the flu shot that administrators backed down and didn't require it. And one in particular, she claimed that somebody had got a petition going, and something like 85% of the hospital employees signed the petition. Now, that seems really unusual to me. You know, I hear from healthcare workers all the time who say they don't know if anybody else in the hospital is opposed to the flu vaccine because everybody's afraid to talk about it. There probably are plenty of people who are, but you never know who's going to turn you in or what, you know, who it's safe to talk to. So in some hospitals, apparently this is a topic more easily discussed and shared, and people can realize that there are other people and how many and so forth. So it really varies widely in my impression through my clients from around the country, healthcare worker clients. But I just think this is fascinating because I think these are probably very much the exception in terms of what's going on generally around the country. But to know that that has happened, and not even in one isolated instance, you know, it's a little more than a fluke. So yes, maybe you may be exactly right, Mayor. Maybe somebody is not willing to stir that pot.
So interesting. So, you know, Alan, I think we have another a listener on. How about we bring him
on?
We
do. And yes, somebody whose number ends in 39. And welcome to the show. Tell us your first name, please, and have a comment or question for us.
Good evening, Alan, and congratulations, Mayor, and your baby 13 at home.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. You know, I have to let everyone know, you know, why when we made the announcement of the baby being born, that there's no name to the baby, because by Jewish tradition, the name of the baby isn't given a name until the Brit Milah, which is the ritual circumcision. And so that's why the only designation is 13.
Right.
I have a number.
You remember
of
you told Sherry Tempany that the vitamin K actually rises drastically on the seventh day, just in time for the blood to clot after the circumcision?
Exactly right, too, you know. And that's why I've always told, you know, when patients ask me, do I need to have a vitamin K shot, forget about if it's the right thing or the wrong thing. I said, one of the biggest problems is because they're doing circumcision on the first day of life, and that's out of the question to do it. You know, in fact, I'm personally against circumcision except for ritual reasons. You know, but that's exactly right. I mean, the vitamin K levels reach their peak and on the eighth day of life, and that's when by the Jewish religious halacha, that's the law, is when the circumcision takes place.
A question I have for some of you who are afraid to call in because the place they're employed, they're afraid of some backlash, but she is actually trying to enroll a child in Head Start who was only given the MMR. And one of our local activists said that they may have a problem with a religious exemption since she selectively started vaccinating. It may appear like there was some medical reason behind it, not religious.
Well, let me give you a little bit of advice, you know, and I'm giving just a very small legal bit of advice, more political than legal. Whenever I have many families that come to me over the school physical time, and they've their children who they've brought to me, many of them have had some vaccines. I learned this from my good friend Alan Phillips. When I fill out the form, I put a big X on the vaccines. I don't put anything that was there. Then I put see attached religious waiver. And because there's no reason, once you have a religious waiver, you're under no political obligation to list any of the old vaccines. It doesn't make a difference. But you're not in compliance medically. You're only in compliance legally. That's one of the reasons why I never put any of the old vaccines in. It exactly brings up the can of worms what you're talking about, where they say, well, why did you give this one? And there was actually a court case on this, Alan, and I talked about it in my book in Wyoming a few years ago, where a mother decided she didn't want to give the hepatitis B shot, which is for a sexually transmitted disease, and the child was thrown out of school because the child had received all the vaccines up until then, and the lower courts in Wyoming said that you've given all the other vaccines, why wouldn't you give this one? And the Supreme Court in Wyoming had a very brilliant decision where they said, don't we have a right to change our minds? Don't we many times do things when we're younger, which we wouldn't do as we're older? It says, and every parent has a right to make up their own mind, especially when it comes to religious values. Many of us, when we're younger, don't have anywhere the religious values we have as we get older. And so they said, they upheld the child going back to school. But I think that it brings out the issue that putting vaccine information on the sheet, and if you're now going to handle a religious waiver, can at times open up a political can of worms.
So just putting an example,
let me chime in on
any info about the fact that she did take one should work.
I'd like to chime in on this.
Yeah.
Because I see actually, not necessarily in this specific example, but in this sort of general arena, I see sort of two separate issues here. One is what you addressed, Mayor, is it valid legally to, I'll put it this way, does it matter if you've had vaccines in the past? Can you still exercise a religious exemption? And I've seen a lot of people, in fact, I've even seen hospitals when they create their policy for their employees where they will say, if you've had past vaccines, you can't have an exemption at the hospital. Of course, that violates federal law, and we can get that fixed if you know and how to deal with it. But there's sort of a separate question, which is, can you pick and choose in any degree or sense now in the present with a religious exemption? No. Can you get some vaccines and oppose the other ones for religious reasons? And there's sort of two different parts to that question. So the first part is, well, does the law contemplate that? For example, in Colorado, they have a form where you can put a little check by either all the vaccines you want or don't want, and you can say that it's for philosophical or religious reasons. They don't basically follow up and check or ask or anything. And it's sort of the ideal, because the people who favor vaccines would rather see you do some than no vaccines, and the people who are anti-vaccine would rather see you do some than all vaccines. And so everybody seems to be happy with the compromise. But there was actually a case in New York, and I don't think it even went to court. I think it was just an administrative proceeding where a mother was opposed to only those vaccines that involved the use of aborted fetal tissue in the production or manufacture of the vaccines. And it's sort of interesting, because when you look at the letter of the law, the wording of the law, the way most laws are written, I think probably most people applying a standard legal analysis for proper interpretation of statutes would say they probably contemplate an all-or-nothing kind of position. You either are opposed to vaccines for religious reasons or you're not. But I would maintain that where there is a clear religious objection to only some vaccines if it makes sense. And I use the aborted fetal tissue because that to me is an example of an objection that really does make sense. And at least one mother in New York took this issue to the next level, an administrative proceeding, and she won at that level. Not necessarily legal precedent in the formal sense, but it certainly sets, at least informally, some precedent there. And it might be that you have the valid religious objection to only some vaccines or only one vaccine or whatever it is. Like someone could easily oppose the hepatitis B because it's a sexually transmitted disease and they don't mind the vaccines for the diseases that are transmitted through the air or by casual contact or whatever, but this one involves a whole different arena. And I could see someone having a definable religious objection, you know, to a Hep B and HPV vaccines as distinct from the other ones. Now, who knows ultimately what a court's going to say, what a judge is going to say if the matter ends up in court. And it might be that on some of these kinds of conflicts, what you're really asking is for local officials, or later as you go to court, you're asking the court to, in effect, carve out an exception or to interpret the law in a way that goes really a step beyond the wording of the law as it came from the legislature. So it's not a guaranteed win by any means, but I think there are some situations that provide a legally valid argument that I would take to court, you know, that I could see being valid enough to present to a court if that's what it came to. And I think courts, perhaps even looking at the case you just talked about as an example, Mayor, there can be ways and other ways that people distinguish between vaccines in terms of their religious beliefs. In the same sense that somebody might distinguish in terms of their religious beliefs between vaccines and other forms of medical treatment. I have a lot of clients who are opposed to vaccines for religious reasons, but there would be circumstances where they'd use other medical treatment. Well, as long as your beliefs make the distinction, legally you're sound, you're valid, and there's even precedent that supports this. And the most common thing I hear people say is, well, they say, well, vaccines are about the future. They're about hypothetical future events, and the future is up to God, and there are many variations on the theme in terms of the exact belief people say. You know, I put my faith and trust in God's protection, or if I get a vaccine, I'm telling God I don't trust him to heal me if I do get sick, or if I get a vaccine, I'm interfering with God's plan, and all these are different ideas. The Eastern religions will often talk about karma. I can't get a vaccine because it'll interfere. If it's my karma to get a disease, I have to get that disease. So there are all different ways that beliefs may be distinguished between vaccines and other medical treatments. And in the same way, if beliefs clearly distinguish between different kinds of vaccines, I think it would be a legally valid position. Whether you have to fight for it because it's new and not contemplated in the language of the law, maybe is a separate question.
Good answer, Alan.
Well, I hope it made sense.
No, it made a lot of sense. You know, what you're saying that you have a chance of winning it even if they come after you in a sense and say, since you have some vaccines, you're obligated to take everything, you know. But I could tell you, I think prudent or practically, you're best off just leaving it off, you know, just leaving it off the form.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah. I wouldn't. If you're gonna declare religious exemption at that point, whether you have done in the past,
don't volunteer any information that you did once. You once committed a sin.
Right. That's right. Oh, beautiful. Beautifully said. Thank you so much.
All I can blame is that I did not discuss my religious beliefs with my husband, and at that time he went to the MD.
Yeah, I know. Excellent. Thank you
would
so much.
Would that hold any water?
Calling.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Alan,
thanks,
I think we've got
in
just a few seconds left. You know.
Yeah. Time to head on out. But privilege and pleasure as always, Mayor. Looking forward to seeing you again next
pleasure.
Week, of course. And you've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips, here every Monday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Pacific Time on blogtalkradio.com. And we are rebroadcast. There we go. Hit the exit music. Didn't hear it. Rebroadcast naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific time. We'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one drain your soul.
Of our destiny. Let freedom be.